Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. And when the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. And then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." And he said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor.
I heard the bells on Christmas Day. Their old familiar carols play. And why sweet, their songs repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to all. Peace on earth, goodwill to all.
I do want to say a word about that song. You saw perhaps on the screen that it's a poem by Longfellow from the 1860s, and the Brilliance, a group that now lives in New York, took that poem and set it to music, and they released it last week, and then our music team heard it and recreated it for us today. And there was a family that came into the first worship service, and Linda and I are trying to not take this to heart. We're not pondering this in our hearts. We're not treasuring this, but they said, "We're thinking about a new shirt for the table, a sweatshirt. It could say, 'I came for the coffee and stayed for the music.'" It seems actually beautiful. So I want to share a picture. This is an image of David Young. David was the high school theater teacher at the school that I went to back at Kansas City, Missouri. And I was not a theater kid. But graduation required that we either had to take a full year of choir, or we could take a semester of art and a semester of theater. And so the choir teacher was notorious for ruining GPAs. And so I opted for art and theater. And I managed to stay in the back with like the clay and the paint and not make too much of a mess. Got through art and then found my way into theater. And theater was like no class I had ever been in. First of all, Mr. Young just went by David. that was okay. David, that was not okay in any other class to call a teacher by their first name. And I've thought about him over and over as we've been in this worship series that helped us to journey through the season of Advent to prepare for the mystery and hope of love being born at Christmas and then this Christmas season. And at least one theater kid here at the table has made it abundantly clear every week after worship that it's obvious that neither Linda nor I were theater kids. Theater people can be kind of dramatic. So every week after worship, this person has met me before I even get to the back of the sanctuary, and this person walks out with me to tell me how we could have designed this that would have fit actually with what happens in an actual theater production. So the truth is, we thought we were being pretty awesome when we held together the readings assigned to the Global Christian Church with this image of rehearsing Christmas. So we knew that, like, you start by reading through the script. I'm like, so we're going to begin at the end of Luke's gospel. That's perfect. And then blocking, like, where does God show up in the world? Out on the margins. And so we reflected on that. And then the polishing rehearsal. And this person let me know, like, nobody does a polishing rehearsal. That's just made up. You Googled that, didn't you? And I was like, yes, we Googled that. And then we had a dress rehearsal, and then we had the opening night, and many of you were here for opening night. It was all played by understudies, and then finally we moved to the cast party, and every time this person has let us know we could have done this a little bit differently. Even today's theme, cast party, that's debated in the world of theater. Like, if everyone is supposed to come, why is it called a cast party? Doesn't that exclude the people that maybe worked behind the scenes or who did the stage work and all of those things? And so theater, like the table, is supposed to be a place, like God, is supposed to be a place for all, like all means all. And so our language matters as we do these things. And so we probably should have called this production party to make sure everybody was on the same page. And I Googled my teacher, David Young, earlier this week, and I found that he is still teaching in our hometown, but not at the school that I went to, but they built a new fancy high school on the north side of town, and he's the theater teacher that's there. And I found this video of David. It's only like 48 seconds long. I think I was the fourth person on YouTube to hit play on it. And I watched it, and it confirmed, like, every memory that I had of this teacher was confirmed. In this soft and gentle and genuine tone, he reflects. He's trying to talk to high school students about the transition from high school to college that at least some among us have been living in for a little while. And he shares that as he went away from his family, it was in college that the theater became a family for him. It actually helped him keep on keeping on when he wasn't ready to as a college student. And I can say he then created that environment, that family, for a lot of kids. I don't know what theater was like at your school, but at ours, the theater department was eclectic. We were a motley crew. It was kids that, like, didn't fit in anywhere, found a safe haven together there in theater. And David helped to create that over and over and over. And even for somebody like me, I was not in that group, and I showed up late, a senior, right? I showed up the last semester of my senior year to be a part of that group, and I'm welcomed or adopted into that theater family just long enough to play, like, this really small role that to me felt huge, like it was an amazing role to be out there in front of everybody. And I got to name my own character. We did the play Up the Down Staircase. And so I got to be my brother Tyler and be in the play. And I still remember being welcomed into that family and being part of growing with those folks in that theater community. And then the moment when that last production ends, and the stage is all being, like, you're striking the set, right? And there's a party that's down the street at one of the kids. Their family was welcoming everybody for a cast party. And David was, like, one of the teachers who would show up to something like that and be present with all of us kids in that space. What I remember is the moment when we were striking the stage and we're getting ready to go to that cast party, of the memories that just flood you as you look at the barrenness of that space, of everything that you've been through. Like these kids that you didn't really know that well. Now you can't imagine your life without them in that moment. And so you're part of that family, and there's just this barren, quiet, like sacredness to the space in that transition right before the cast party. And we got to feel something like that right here on Christmas Eve after the 11 o'clock worship service. This place was packed and filled up at 5, and kids were running around, and then 11 was beautiful and poetic, and everybody was making their way out, and then finally, there was just a few of us left here in this space. Avery was outside with his family. They were picking up all the luminarias that had led people here to the sanctuary, and John was in the back on the computer putting the finishing touches on a podcast so that just after midnight, we could share the Christmas Eve message online as well. And Linda was over in the corner trying to decipher the names and the emails and the cell phones that people had written down so that we could do follow-up. And here in the quiet of this space, like the peace is just palpable. You could just feel God's love in the quiet of this space. For most of the world, though, Christmas is already over. Like you saw it maybe as you walked here or you drove. Christmas decorations are packed away. Folks are already on to planning New Year's and figuring out what our resolutions are going to be. But the way of the church is always called otherwise. And that's the truth with our Christmas story as well. See, Christmas in the Christian church is not a day, it's a season. It's 12 days, so today we're in the sixth day of the Christmas season as a global Christian church. Most students, and I learned at 9:30, most teachers and administrators as well, think that going back to school on January 2nd is way too early. January 2nd is way too early to go back. Here we are on December 30th, and the global Christian church is assigned a story in which Jesus is already back in school. So the teachers and the students at 9:30 thought this was a terrible idea. Staying away would have been a far better way to go. And the truth is, this story in Luke's gospel is odd. It's a peculiar story. For starters, Luke 2 opens with the story of Jesus' birth that we celebrated together on Christmas Eve. And then Luke moves right from that to describing a moment when Jesus is an infant and he's in the temple and he's being blessed by two elders in that space. And then, bam, Jesus is 12. That's what happens in the story. And then the next line, fast forward 18 years. Jesus is 30, he's out in the water with John. Think of all of the years, some of you, I'm seeing teachers in the room, you have spent your life studying those formational years of infancy to 12, and then beyond. Think of all of the ink that has been spilled over how character is formed in childhood in these critical ways. And Luke spends all of one line on this entirety of Jesus's childhood. It's an odd thing that we as a church have Jesus's infancy to 30, and this is the only story, these 12 lines, the only story that we have so much for us to wonder about. I mean, even just this packed single line, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. Emmanuel, God is with us, human form, increasing in wisdom. Like, what does that mean to have God in human form and the God increases in wisdom? That's a different understanding than the static nature of God so many of us come to church with. It's as though Jesus is growing in faith, learning what it means to reach in love and to give generously, and we're left to wonder in our own hearts what it means for a fully human, fully divine child of God to grow in wisdom and favor with God. It's not just that Jesus is recognized at baptism at 30 as a beloved child of God, but is growing in God's favor from infancy, from within his mom's womb. And then it's all of humanity, we're told, is growing in favor toward him as well. So I want to unpack that story just a little bit. See, Jerusalem was packed in this moment in Luke 2. It was packed because Jewish people were gathering from what they considered all of the parts of the world for a week-long festival that's called Passover. So hear it this way. Mary and Joseph are traveling to Jerusalem with Jesus, and they're traveling as part of a caravan. That's an image that is etched in our minds these days, is it not? Jesus and Mary and a little baby are traveling as a caravan to Jerusalem. They're watching over each other in love, trying to avoid danger that might arise. And it's reasonable to believe that as they get there, they don't have a place to stay. So they're reaching out and dependent. God is dependent on neighbors to take God in, to offer hospitality in that space. And so they become dependent on friends or family or maybe strangers. And somebody probably took them in to their place and made room for them. And then that caravan starts to return, but Jesus stays behind. And then his family is left to do all this searching for their adolescent child. A preacher to preachers, her name is Barbara Brown Taylor. She says it this way. Jesus' motive for staying in the temple after they had all headed home is unclear. Maybe he loses track of time, like any boy caught up in something that he loves. Maybe he has had enough of childish things and wishes to mark his maturation with an exclamation point. Maybe he does not think he's lost at all. Whatever his motive, he does not waste any courtesy on his mother when she finds him in the temple talking with the teachers. "Why were you searching for me?" he says. I think with a little indignation is the way I hear it. Making her distress her problem. And any parent, that would set you off, I believe. Did you not know that I must be in my father's house, in Abba's house, in God's house? No, she didn't know that. And either did Joseph. Why is he off the hook on this? See, the scene from Jesus' childhood invites readers to notice how important the temple is, the sanctuary, I would say, in our day to day, is for Luke's gospel and for Jesus as well. And this was reminded to me on earlier this week. We hosted around 100 unhoused guests here for Winter Sanctuary. And one of the people who came to clean the toilets with her children was sharing a story that she came last year at Christmas Eve to the table for a candlelight. And it was amazing. And she made this commitment that she was going to start to make the sanctuary, Christian community, part of her life. And then a whole year passed, and she found her way back here for the second time on Christmas Eve again. And then she made another commitment. I'm going to really try to make Christian community part of my life. And so she and her kids came out early in the morning and were cleaning the toilets so that 100 homeless folks could experience that sense of hospitality that Mary and Joseph and Jesus might have experienced back in Jerusalem. She was trying to be a part of that. And Luke wants us to know that the temple like that is critical for him and for Jesus as well. It's the temple that Jesus comes as an infant and two elders bless him. It's the temple at 12 that he's on the ground with leaders back and forth, learning in traditional Jewish style about how to root their lives in God's love. And it's the temple in which Jesus will boldly pronounce good news for all and emphatically make sure everyone knows that all means all for him. At 12, Jesus is being shaped in the temple by religious leaders. His Jewish identity is strengthening. And as he grows in wisdom and faith, the scene is also a reminder that as Jesus' authority to teach about God's love grows, so too does the tension rise with him and his family, or those that are closest to him. Again, Barbara Brown Taylor says it beautifully. As becomes clear in today's story, the enlarging of family boundaries, like the enlarging of family boundaries as a Christian family, does not come without stretch marks. Jesus speaks as sharply to his mother here in Luke's gospel as he does in John 2. And in Mark's gospel, he doesn't speak to her at all, but only about her. And later in Luke's gospel, Jesus erases any doubt about what such behavior means. He says, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother cannot be my disciple." And we're left to wonder, like, what happened to honor your mother and father? Barbara Brown Taylor wonders, what happens to a person when she decides to stop accepting what her family tells her and to start studying with other teachers instead? Is conflict inevitable, or is it possible to honor one's family of origin as well as one's ever-expanding family of faith? I'm just going to leave that question because I think it's for all of us a big one. And I was holding that question, watching on Christmas Eve at 5 and then at 11, as face after face of new people came into this space. And some of the new people, it becomes obvious, right? Because they get a candle by somebody on the hospitality team, and they look to the person next to them, and they say, "What's the candle for?" That's kind of a cue. Even a slow person like me knows this person hasn't been to Candlelight Christmas Eve. They don't know what's going to happen. So that's kind of amazing, right? It's kind of like this person is learning how to do Christian community. It's like riding a bike. Like, they're learning this for the very first time. And whoever is next to them is like when you're going with your child and then you let go for the first time and they're kind of wobbly. Like, that's what's happening. And then I would look to the next person behind them, and that person didn't have any questions about the candle. They knew what the candle was. And what I could feel in some of those stories was that these were folks who knew church like they knew how to ride a bike. They knew exactly what was going to happen, where things were, how it was going to go. And what was also true was that the last time they were on the bike threw them off. And it hurt really bad. So walking back in this sanctuary was scary. That bike wasn't there for them last time when they needed it. And all of those things were here with us on Christmas Eve. Luke's gospel only includes this single story from Jesus' childhood, and it may just be that it's a reminder that Jesus is truly in it with us. We say that all the time, but I think we pass by it. Emmanuel means God with us. For me on Christmas Eve, it was just a reminder that God is with us. That's the story of Jesus in his childhood that we get with us in navigating the tensions, the divisions that can feel inevitable as we navigate faith and family, home, and growing. Whatever Mary may have thought of all this, we're told by the author of Luke or the editors that Jesus' mother treasured all these things in her heart. Another way of translating that Greek phrase is that Mary, finally finding her lost son, she is thoroughly keeping all these things in her heart. She's holding all of the feelings, all of it. And it leaves me to wonder, like, what might it look like for us this Christmas to thoroughly keep all of that, the tensions, the hopes, and the hurts in our hearts, and to tend to that? See, the cast party, or the production party, is going to take place down the hall in the A-frame that we've called the social hall. It'll take place right after this, and we'll celebrate the last year that we've been together here at the table. We'll break bread, and I hope all of you will join us, whether you have something to share or not. We want to just be together and have that meal and celebrate. It'll be a physical reminder of the ever-expanding nature of what it means to be church family. That's what we'll reflect on as we're gathered around those little tables. That's what we'll be part of. We'll be the understudies taking our roles in those places. And something like happens in a theater company. You look back at the cast party or the production party on all you've been through together, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And as you gather as well, you start to kind of wonder about what's next. I think that's the truth in every cast party, right? Like, what role might I audition for next? Wonder what play we'll be in together. Will this be the end? Or will we try this again? And so we're going to do something like that down in the A-frame just after this. We're going to share a potluck, and we're going to look back a little bit at the year that's passed and look ahead to the year that is before us. And the theater became a family for my teacher, David Young, while he was in school. And then that theater family kept him alive. And then he's been a part of creating that for all these other generations of kids that have been going through, just like I was a small part of, that motley crew of kids. Some showing up late like me, some like ninth grade ready to spend the rest of their life doing this. They were all welcome to that space. And every year we're reminded, because I think that the table is kind of doing something similar to that. Something a lot like what David's doing in the theater over there. See, every year, students in the theater departments graduate and newcomers arrive. That's just the normal rhythm, right? And we here at the table, we have experienced two really significant memorials in the life of our community of faith this year. And we've had a number of important leaders, like pivotal people in who we've been over these last several years, who have followed their vocational callings, their dreams, and it's led them halfway across the country. Whether it's Larry moving down to Southern California or the Lichty family moving back to the Midwest, like people who made this their family, who've been called out in different places. And there's, just like in theater, there are hurts that goes with those things and hopes that are there that remain. And new people are finding their way here over and over and over. One of my favorite stories about people finding their way here to the table was back, I don't remember when, probably the fall, maybe the winter, we had, actually I don't remember when it was, doesn't matter. We had a couple nights where we were doing movies on a Friday night. It was a Friday night movie, and this one movie we were going to show was about an African-American preacher in the prosperity gospel tradition who, like, moved beyond that and was rethinking what church meant, and we did that on Friday. We had an awesome group here for reflection on what that means and what that looks like for us, and then on Sunday, we had our very first gathering that we call Growing in Faith. It's like our small group space where we learn how to be in more intimate community together, and Linda and I teach that, and so there was a family that showed up on Sunday night to Growing in Faith, right? And we go through the entire hour. We're all sharing, reflecting on what drew us here and all this stuff. And finally, this family's like, oh, we thought this was movie night. So they were like amazing and brave and stuck with it the whole time, thinking that they were coming for one reason. And they stuck with it. And then they were helping some of you all resettle a refugee family. And then they were fixing our computer screen that was broken on Winter Sanctuary as this space was a movie theater for unhoused guests. That's the kind of unexpected surprise turn that people find here at the table. It's part of what life is like in the theater world. You're always open to surprise and trying to go against the norm in these ways. And over, we find that story to be the case when families show up and they sit maybe over in this back right side of the sanctuary. I guess that's your left, stage left. They sit over on this side, and it's their first time to come to the table. And they notice, maybe on the welcome video while they're sitting here, or over here on the side of the sanctuary, they notice that this person that's been in their work life for all these years is part of the table as well. That becomes kind of amazing for a moment to them to think, I've been going about my life not knowing that this other family or this other person is trying to figure out how do you live life together and resist empire with others in a way. And then you see those people and you start to make these connections, like some of you sitting next to each other right now that didn't know that's what it was going to be like. One of my favorite things, one of our favorite things we've heard is we had a family who was here at the table, and they described one of the things they love about the table is the music and the art. And they describe it, this is like, they come here because this feels like little Mandavi when they come to this space. And I think anybody that's ever written a play or a script, there's some part of them that wants it to make it on Broadway, right? And we might not be ready for Broadway. I think the truth is we're way more like off Broadway. That's like more our style anyways. But I do think there is this, I have this wonder about, like, where's our music team going to go on tour in the year ahead? Because they share the good news in a powerful, powerful way. Linda and I, some people think, have held pretty tightly to the director's chair, maybe me more than Linda, over these last 8 years. And one of the things that we've learned this year, we've recognized that people who never imagined your beautiful faces sitting right here, right now, out of their generosity, we get to be in this space. They didn't know you were going to be here to appreciate that stained glass. But they decided to give generously because they trusted in God's love so much that they wanted people to experience that. And so we've been looking back on how they passed their legacy on to us and wondering about what does it mean for us to pass this on to future generations. And in the church world, that's called the capital campaign. And you do a feasibility study to try to figure out, like, what could you do to help pass this place on? And in that process, we learned a lot of things in that process that we're excited to lean into in the year ahead. But one of them is that there are a lot of folks who maybe have been moving behind the scenes here at the table for a while that are ready to take center stage. And so one of the hopes that we have as we celebrate this transition in leadership in our A-frame after this for the potluck is that we're gonna talk about that together. Like, what does it look like for leadership to be transparent and open here at the table, and how do we live into that? We've brought on people like Avery to help us with that, to move in those directions, and we're making those transitions because we're trying to listen together. It's like in a play, it's not just the director that's making these things, but we're all doing this together to learn and be in this, to make this the best that it can be, because what we hope this is an expression of God's love. That's what we're called to be. And that reality is gonna be even more real in the coming fall because Pastor Linda is gonna take off for 3 months of renewal leave. That's been funded by the Lilly Project because they think she's really special and they want to give her 3 months to reflect on being a pastor and a mom and a partner. And so as she does that, we're gonna figure out how do we make our way together for a time without her, and that'll be a big transition for me. And some roles in every theater production are age specific, right? Like when you have the Christmas pageant, you're not gonna cast the grandparent as the baby Jesus, right? That just doesn't make any sense. And that's the case here at the table as well. Like for some time, our nursery has been bursting at the seams. That's just been true. And we've been able to bring on Ronnie from our own community to help as an assistant in the nursery. And then we've brought on a couple of other assistants to help Empress as co-stars with our youngest friends there in the nursery. And now we're also bringing this eclectic team together, teenagers and adults, to wonder about what might ministry with young people look like. And we're doing that alongside some expert consultants from Princeton Theological Seminary. So there's so much that we look ahead to, that we hold from this last year. But friends, before we go, and before we celebrate the year that we're about to complete and look to these next steps, I want to invite us to just steal a couple of moments together in the beauty of Christmas, in the beauty of Emmanuel, God with us, incarnation, God made flesh. I want to invite us to take some time as we come to the table to sit beside the manger. You see them right there. Those are handmade mangers by John, and then the babies that were made by Jan. They're at various prayer stations all around the sanctuary. And one of the things that you see if you spend some time in Luke's gospel is Mary keeps coming up, and she keeps coming up as this contemplative, reflective, thoughtful mom, discerning what the purpose of God is and what the place of God is going to be in her life. And I want to invite us this morning, as we celebrate this Sunday in Christmas, to come alongside her. We heard Melissa sing that lullaby to reflect and to wonder a little bit about God's place and purpose in our own lives. That Christmas wouldn't just be something that someone else has told us what to think about, or something we've checked off of a list, but would actually transform us this year. And the good news is, if it didn't transform you at Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, the season isn't over. So I want to invite you to hear these words. This is a poem by Howard Thurman called The Work of Christmas. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the people, to make music in the heart. The cast party is going to start soon, just down the hall. And indeed, this motley crew of folks is going to gather there together. And as we prepare to strike the set of Christmas once more, I want to invite you to treasure in your own heart, to thoroughly hold the depth and the hope and the beauty of Emmanuel, God with us. For the beauty and the hope and the truth of Christmas is not over. It is for all the world this very day, and may it be ours as well. Amen.
La 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 la. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare Him room, and heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing. Fire.